Hey, this is Cedric. Today's episode with Kyle Murphy is brought to you by Ledin.io, a better home for your Bitcoin. Ledin is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. With industry-best interest rates on savings, use your Bitcoin as collateral for loans or double your Bitcoin stack with their Buy 2X program. As of November 1st, you can now start earning 9.5% APY on your USDC and 6.2% APY on your first two Bitcoin. Already a Ledin client? From now on, when a new Ledin client signs up using your referral link and funds their Bitcoin or USDC savings account, they can receive 10 USDC as a reward deposited straight into their account. Certain terms and conditions apply. The signer must create an account with your referral link, deposit at least 75 USDC or only 0.0015 BTC into their Ledin account for just 15 days. Listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast can still get an exclusive offer of 50 free USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our link. We only have a couple more weeks on this current campaign with Ledin, so I hope you guys are taking advantage of these amazing offers. Learn more, sign up, and get earning at start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. I've decided to go full-time on the show and pursue a career in Bitcoin. If you are a Bitcoin company or a discerning company looking to reach a large audience of rabid Bitcoiners, hit me up in my Twitter DMs or email me at cedricyungelman@gmail.com. You can follow the Bitcoin Matrix podcast on Twitter at DeLaBTCMatrix, and you can follow me on Twitter at cedyungelman. Both accounts have Bitcoin tips turned on. I know how precious those Satoshis are, so thanks to those of you who have already sent me some sats. Your continued support means a lot and really helps keep this project we have here going. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, please make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. And now, let's turn our attention to this fantastic conversation with Kyle Murphy, where we discuss his time in the military, coming back from Afghanistan as a 240-pound rage-roiding monster, living in his van, Ponzi empires, and how you can get involved and contribute value to the Bitcoin network and community. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Kyle Murphy, the Bitcoin bum.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Kyle Murphy is the co-founder of Austin Bitcoin Club and the CEO of Pleb Industries. He likes to build community, and he landed in Austin so he could build it on Bitcoin. And Kyle is literally orange pilling all of Austin. Kyle Murphy, aka the Bitcoin bum on Twitter, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, man. I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Yeah, man. I'm super excited to connect. We've been going back and forth a little bit on Twitter and the DMs for a while, and I've been following your tweets for what's got to be 6 or 7 months now, I'm thinking. And there's been quite a bit of, I don't know what the right word for it is, but there's just been a plethora of experiences that you've shared with us in this last several months. So I'd love to dig into it. When did you land in Austin? Because I'm seeing all these tweets about everything you're putting together in Austin and these videos.
It's crazy how time flies, man. I probably haven't been in Austin much longer than like 6, maybe 7 months now. So it's basically been kind of like a hard and fast hit the ground running since I got here. It has been a nonstop roller coaster ride. But yeah, six, 7 months. I think there was the first trip to Austin was actually 2 months prior to that, where I was here for just a couple of days. I never actually ventured far enough south to get into Austin. I ended up buying a one-way ticket to Mexico. Was there for like 10 days before I realized that travel the way I like to travel was kind of done, and it was just time to like put some roots down somewhere and get to work. So I shortly after that, found myself back in Austin, and it's been full stop since.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely I get what you're saying there, putting your roots down somewhere and getting to work. What was the work you envisioned upon, you know, your arrival? Or was it kind of like you'll seek and find out?
Yeah, I would say it skews more heavily towards seek and find out. I knew when I landed here, it was Bitcoin was what I was focused on. What I was going to do was relatively unclear. I really kind of landed here thinking I was just going to try and find work in the Bitcoin space. There's Unchained Capital and like Bitcoin just seems to be flowing here. So I was like, I'll find a way to find work in Bitcoin. As I was kind of going through the process of trying to figure out what I wanted to do or where I would fit, I just kind of went back to my roots. The kind of the thing I keep telling people that have asked me, like, if I was trying to get started in Bitcoin right now, like if I wanted to just leave my fiat thing and figure out how to do something like what you're doing, like what would be your suggestion? And the same thing I keep telling everybody is basically what I did for myself, which is that I was just like, okay, I kind of made a list of things that I like that I enjoy doing. And I made another list of things that I knew I was good at. Mm-hmm. And I saw if there was anything in there where they kind of crossed, because I genuinely believe pretty much everything is coming to Bitcoin. So it was like, find something I enjoy that I'm good at and find a way to do it on Bitcoin. I like people. I'm good at building communities. I started trying to do it on Bitcoin.
Yep. So tell us about, you know, Austin Bitcoin Club and what you're building there.
Austin Bitcoin Club has been amazing, man. What a blessing. The pleb community is such good people. But Austin Bitcoin Club was just an idea, man. It started as I was literally just going to put out a tweet into the Twitterverse and be like, hey, I'm a Bitcoiner. I want to hang out with other Bitcoiners. I'm going to be here if you want to come hang out. I didn't really care where it was going to be. At one point I was just like, I'll throw it in a park. I don't really care. Like, I'll just be the guy under a tree at the park if you want to come kick it with Bitcoiners. I randomly met the co-founder of the Austin Bitcoin Club, Car Gonzalez, Thriller X on Twitter, because I was recording a couple podcast episodes at the time. I saw he owned a media company. I had some questions about what I was doing with my podcast. One thing led to another, and the two of us kind of both hit the ground running together. And he had some connections that had suggested reaching out to a handful of places, including Capital Factory, where we're hosting a meetup now. And it went from an idea where it was like, I'm going to tweet about hanging out in a park, to we hosted our first meetup maybe 10 weeks after our first conversation and had 35 people at Capital Factory.
Yeah. And what is Capital Factory and how does that fit in with the Pleb Lab and Industries?
Yeah. So Pleb Industries is, we really don't throw around the name Pleb Industries too much anymore. It was like, it is the LLC, but honestly, it's like mostly Pleb Lab and the Austin Bitcoin Club and then Keep Austin Pleb are basically the three things that we kind of have going on right now. The Austin Bitcoin Club is the free open source community social networking thing that'll be free, open to the public forever and ever. Like, I don't intend to ever make that a paid thing ever. Just like, come kick it with Bitcoiners. We provide the chicken, we provide the beer. It's just a good time. Keep Austin Pleb was the thing that spun off of that for more paid events. And then the Pleb Lab was just kind of out of the ideas from people that had expressed interest at our Austin Bitcoin Club meetups to get devs together. They wanted semi-regularly. I started looking for a way to do that. One thing led to another. It became a very regular thing. I now host 10 devs in this room at least 5 days a week. Sometimes there's a handful of us in here even on weekends. And Capital Factory is basically, they're a handful of things. They are, or at least were, a tech accelerator. They are a co-working space. They have their own fund. Basically, like, their motto is they are the center of gravity for all things tech in Texas. And yeah, that basically sums up their mission. They just kind of try to be an all-encompassing thing that can help entrepreneurs grow and expand their early stage businesses.
Yeah. Tell us more about Austin. You know, are we going to see Bitcoin signs in every restaurant? What's going on in Rainy Street? What has the community been like, you know, since you've been there?
The community is awesome. The people here even at our first meetup, when we had, I think it was probably like 80 people had signed up on Meetup, said they were coming. I think we only had 35 turn out for the first one. But the thing I noticed right from the get-go was it was a super engaged audience. Like, everybody was super passionate. Everybody really wanted things to work. They were happy that community was starting to get built. And that passion has kind of pushed through all the way now, what was our fourth meetup the other night. The answer to your question, will we see Bitcoin signs in all businesses in Austin soon? Yes, I do believe the answer is yes. So one of the guys inside Pleb Lab, his name's Michael. He is the co-founder of Oshi, which is a local kind of hyper-localized promotions app. It works similar to Groupon, and it also kind of acts as a payment operating system. So it allows businesses to very simply onboard to a Lightning standard, use the app for promotions and e-commerce the way you would on Groupon. And basically, through the cost savings of using Lightning versus your standard payment operating system, it incentivizes using those cost savings to pay sats back to kind of reward customers for shopping at your location. We are now getting close to 25% of Rainy Street, which is like a pretty significant historical kind of like cultural hangout scene. It's got a lot of bars built into houses in what used to be a residential neighborhood. Really cool. Bunch of food trucks, bunch of bars, built-in houses. We figured it'd be the prime place to start because they're all neighbors. Like, you get one or two of them, and like the next thing you know, they're literally just talking to their neighbors. And that's how it worked. So we went from zero businesses on a Bitcoin standard to there are currently, I believe it's 7 fully onboarded to the app on Oshi now, with I believe 6 or 7 more scheduled through the rest of this week to kind of sit down with Michael and finish their onboarding process. And we'd like to get to 100% of Rainy Street before December 2nd for the Bitcoin block party.
Right. That'd be awesome. I'd love to, for you maybe to reflect on, you know, your time in Austin, and like maybe looking back, if you were to come back and do it all over again, or someone else were to, what kind of, how do you see it like now, if you, and maybe if you weren't as extroverted, what's it like, the community there? Is it easy to meet people? Are there, you know, is it more than just the BitDevs meetup and the Austin, you know, the Bitcoin club? Is there a lot more going on? Do you feel like you're in a Bitcoin city?
I think it's easy to feel like you're in a Bitcoin city if you're a Bitcoiner and you spend the time getting involved, because there's so many Bitcoiners here and they all just keep coming. I think if you don't spend the time, then maybe you show up and it doesn't feel like a Bitcoin city. Overall, the vibe of the entire city, in my opinion, is very friendly, very welcoming. I am a huge fan of the city of Austin. I love that it's super bike friendly. The weather's pretty good most of the year, albeit a bit hot in the summer. But yeah, overall, I think the vibes here are great. I think it's becoming more and more a Bitcoiner city every single day. My goal, if I have it my way, is we will turn Austin into the first Citadel City state and secede from the state of Texas and just turn into our own sovereign nation.
Yeah, I think I have a few more questions on that, but you know, I think that we'll get to that in a little bit later. I'd love to, you're writing a book?
It's kind of been put on the back burner a bit, but yes, I did start co-authoring a book. We were kind of working on the theme of Bitcoin for veterans and service members. Things just started happening really, really fast with some things on my co-author side and the Austin Bitcoin Club all around the same time. We kind of got halfway through the book and we haven't really been as into it as we once were, but it's still out there. It'll get done eventually.
Awesome. You know, I think it's a really interesting approach and angle on an introduction to Bitcoin. So, you know, it was a book geared towards the service and military. So how did you end up in the military?
Yeah, great question. I mean, mostly just from poor circumstances where I was at in my youth. I was a troublemaker. I came from a broken home. I was abusing a lot of drugs and hanging out with a lot of the wrong crowds in a lot of the wrong places in my city. Had a pretty storied past with the police, criminal record. And one day I just kind of found myself at the bottom. I was just like in a drive-thru at McDonald's in the second window, like waiting for my cheeseburger with the cop behind me with the sirens on. And I just had this little voice that was like, dude, maybe it's just time to try something different. I talked to an Army recruiter and the offer they gave me was just kind of too good to be true. It was like, we can eliminate your criminal record. We'll give you an education that'll be relevant in the real world when you come back. Paid education on the far side of the journey. Oh, and by the way, like $6,000 signing bonus for being a medic. And if you leave in the next 30 days, another $10,000 bonus for leaving quickly. I signed the dotted line and 7 days later, I was on my way towards being a combat medic.
Wow. Combat medic. So I'd love to get into that. What exactly does that entail? And where are you? Well, not what exactly does that entail, but like, you know.
It's a funny question. What does it entail? The job is essentially like, you get shot, you get blown up, keep them alive long enough to get them on a helicopter and like to the next level of treatment where surgeons and doctors can do much deeper medical stuff than me.
Where are you when you refer to something like this? I mean, I'm sure it's not in the US. I mean, you're in some sort of combat zone. And are you in like a desert or some sort of near a city or, you know, a base? How many people are there?
Desert mountains. So we're stationed in Kandahar, which is southeast Afghanistan near the border of Pakistan. We were there for a year. The rest of my 4 years was back in the States. So it was like 2.5 years roughly of like medical training and then just further medical training and soldier training, getting prepared for deployment. And then a year, came back and had 1 year where I kind of just was in the transition period of getting out. But yeah, southeastern Afghanistan, deserts, high mountains, kind of in the like Hindu Kush mountain range.
So those first 2.5 years, are you then deployed with people that you were with for those first 2.5 years? And is that like a full break where, I mean, that your life completely changes and maybe the tone of what's going on? And
yes, war changes everything, man. There's honestly, coming back from that was, I think you actually, I saw you shared one of my tweets with some pictures right before this podcast, was that like post Afghanistan, I was just a shell of a man. I was just broken as fuck. I kind of tried to repress everything that I had thought, seen, been, done in my time at war. I drank myself into an oblivion. I was abusing anabolic steroids like crazy. I treated everyone I knew like shit. I treated myself like shit. It took 10 years. It took 10 years before I even began to really start to find some peace for just that period of my life. So yeah, it changes everything.
So I'd love to get back to this hinge of this moment where, you know, you're caught in a situation where you're in a drive-through and then there are, opportunities put in front of you. And in a lot of ways, like at 18, that sounds like you're winning the lottery, right. Especially from the other side of the coin, which is the other option. So you're getting some money, you're getting employment, you're going to gain some skills. And the first 2.5 years are nothing like I'm assuming the next year is. And during that year, and I'm trying to maybe think about this for not just yourself, but anyone going through this, because, you know, you think of the military as a lot of ways. I think of it as like there's a military class and there's, families that third, fourth, fifth generation. And I'm not sure if that's true. But in your situation, I would think others in similar situations, there's got to be moments where it's like, what the fuck did I get myself into? What decision did I make when I made it? And was it the best thing for me? And, you know, I wonder, did you have those moments where you were like, you know, I didn't have to be here, or I could have been somewhere else?
Yeah. The short answer again is just yes. There were a lot of those moments where it was like, what the hell did I get myself into? I mean, I had those moments long before I ever made it to Afghanistan. And they were certainly amplified in Afghanistan. The one thing I will say to the credit of the military is they do a really good job of getting you prepared for what war is, even though like this won't make sense, but even though you can't be prepared for war. So like they do a really good job of preparing you, even though you can't be prepared. And that like kind of what I'm trying to say is that they teach you through just all kinds of things that the enemy is out there. The enemy is everyone. And like, you have to be ready for that. You have to just endure all things all the time because everybody is going to be trying to kill you. And it becomes very easy to adopt that mentality when you get there. And one person on your side of the line, somebody on your team is killed. It becomes very real very quickly. Everything that before that was just an idea, just a lesson in a lesson book in the training exercises, it becomes, okay, everyone is a terrorist. Women, children, babies, they're all terrorists. What level of training are they at? And yeah, that kind of changes everything. You find yourself in this place where you literally hate an entire group of people just because of where they're from. Like, I was ready to exterminate an entire race of people simply because they were from this piece of dirt on the giant global dirt and water thing that we're all on.
Right. And I can't just help but think, like, you know, if, you know, how does, you know, how the army might shape your life. And it seems like you had to go through a process of reprogramming yourself or deprogramming yourself. And
I think I had to go through a period of acceptance, honestly. Mm. It was coming to terms with the fact that the person I had been, the thoughts I had, the things I had done, I had to accept that I did them. Because the years and years and years of torture were because, as I said earlier, I just basically repressed it all. I tried to put it behind a wall, lock it in a box, and pretend that it never happened. And in doing that, it just festered and grew, and it became worse and worse and worse over time. But I was a soldier, and I just, like, I had lived the there's nothing wrong with you, like, take Tylenol, drink water, push forward. That's kind of the mentality. You go to war and somebody next to you gets shot, gets blown up. There's no time to stop and cry and be scared. And like you just have to keep going. And it's very, very hard to break those patterns because they become very, 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 very ingrained into you. And it was yoga that really kind of helped save my life. I found myself in yoga. And through my practice of yoga, I found the idea of acceptance, which was that it was just time to acknowledge I had been this person, I had thought these things, I had done these things, and that they do not define who I am today.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I just can't imagine the load that must have been like, not to carry or, but just to deal with. And I wonder how many people maybe not go through that process. And
too many.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, the ages that most people in the army, you know, 18 to 25, brain's not fully formed. The deal that's being put on the table for a lot of people, it just seems like and I just think about, you know, fiat and the implications here. But I'm kind of curious, when you were in the army, maybe some of the positive things about community building that you might have encountered or learned, or just sort of, you know, kind of what was practiced there?
Yeah, I mean, how to define the practice of it is, I think, I don't know if we'd have enough time for that really in this podcast, but what I will say is that I think it's where I began to understand the value of community. I'm not sure I fully understood it until many, many years later as well. But the power of community in the military is definitely very real. It's something I was actually, I got a little bit sidetracked by some of the thought process when I was talking on a tweet with Marty Bent earlier tonight. But one of the things I was trying to relay is that what I do in Bitcoin now, I understand that the goal is to build a better future. But like tying that into the question you asked is that I also do the things that I believe will build this better future. And I personally do it because I want better for the people that are with me right now. I think we all have this this capability when we organize together to make the best version of right now. And I think it's that building that best version of right now together with community that leads us towards that better future that we're all aiming for. And I learned that a lot of that in the military, because there's really no camaraderie like the camaraderie when you are actually at war. When I am all day, every day, I eat, sleep, breathe, and bleed with these people next to me, I am ready to give my life to fight with these people next to me. It's a very powerful connection.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else is, is it about like the meals together as well and the rituals and a lot of, I'm just trying to imagine what, because it seems like you've been yearning for community, like even after, and I don't know when van life became a way of life for you, or, you know, and I kind of would be curious, maybe when did you start maybe traveling very, very heavily? And I would love to hear more about the van and maybe off the grid living.
Yeah. So I think in respect to the military, there's just a group of guys, and like the military gets bigger and bigger and bigger, obviously, as you scale up in these units. There's kind of just like subunits that keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm. And the smaller they are, the closer you tend to be with that subset, because those are the ones, just like what we talk about with citadels, right? It's like, what I want is a hyper localized economy, because a governance model that exists here in Austin, where all of my taxes primarily just go to the city state of Austin, that will be more effective than the city states or the actual states of the United States of America, because they're just too far away. Like DC doesn't have any idea what's going on in Austin, and they're not beneficial to Austin. The same thing in the military. So you have these guys that you get really close with, because I'm literally with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We literally work together. We go back to our barracks together. We eat together. We train together. We go out into the mountains in Afghanistan, and it's like me and one other guy for 10 days in a hole that I dug on the side of the mountain. Like the end of 10 days, I know everything there is to know about that guy. Like there's nothing I don't know. If he's got a third nipple, I know about it. If he had sex with his cousin, I know about it. Like literally there's nothing that's not on the table at that point. So it's a close connection. Going in a completely different direction, van life started about 5 years ago. It was towards the tail end of my yoga training. I got fired from my job at Starbucks. Super random opportunity to take a trip to California and work in the medical marijuana industry presented itself. I hopped in my SUV, drove across the country, didn't work out. Shortly after that, I was like, all right, I'm going to find my way to Colorado. Met a buddy who was doing van life in Colorado. That idea implanted in my head. Came back to Pennsylvania, found a cheap van, built like a barely livable situation, bed frame, threw a mattress, built a bookshelf, threw my Yeti cooler on the floor, grabbed my dog. And in the process of kind of getting it all built, I found an opportunity, financial and educational, that kind of made sense in San Francisco. And I was on my way back to California, and I ended up there for 2.5 years. And I would say San Francisco, even though the city itself sucks, and by the end of it, I couldn't wait to get out of that place, the overall experience I had in San Francisco was magical. I met a really beautiful group of people that will be family forever. And I think San Francisco for me is where I crystallized my belief in the power of community, because I never would have made it through my time in San Francisco. Like van life would have been a total disaster had that community not formed out there.
And what did you maybe get from that community, or what was the feelings or experiences that you had, or the feelings that were evoked?
Love is probably the easiest way to describe it. They really became family. Like it was a group of people I was comfortable sharing my life with. Like they knew everything there was to know about me, and there was just this ability to be honest and real and frank and like pull from one another for support and encouragement and all of the things that just like help people grow together. Like we were all there through thick and thin. It was like when one person's struggling, you could go and talk to somebody who wasn't. And when you were doing well and somebody else wasn't, like you could be there for them. It was just really like a magical little thing, man. There was 16 of us all living in vehicles, mostly all veterans. And we were just living on the same street block, like right in front of the school we were all going to, saving our money and living on a road right in front of school.
Like parked legally or illegally or?
Legally. I mean, it was basically like street sweeping.
You have to
like
move the car.
Yeah. Every other night was just to the other side of the road. Like every night at like 10 o'clock at night, you'd see like a caravan of hobos just like moving their vehicle to the other side of the road to avoid the street sweeper.
And was this, did you guys feel this was apparent to anybody, you know, to observers?
Yeah. We had newspapers that interviewed people in our community. We eventually ended up on NBC. I still have yet to recreate the largest crowd I've ever spoken in front of here in Austin, because I did a 500 person event with the mayor of San Francisco on homelessness and like solutions at the Jewish Community Center downtown in San Francisco.
Right. I used to live in San Francisco around 20 years ago. I did a stint there. I encountered some weird and crazy stuff. It's a great town in a lot of ways. Were there other groups that were doing this van life that you know of? And were you guys doing any traveling intercity? And what were the logistics like that? Would you find like an RV park? Or again, was that like going to a rest area and just going somewhere for free that you could stay for like 8 hours or something?
99% of the time, we literally just kept our vans parked in front of the school. Every once in a while, when it came to like inside the city, there was like a couple places like south of the city near the beach where we would do an overnight jaunt. So like a weekend, like community, like dinner, everybody would cook a meal and we'd just kick it with each other and have a good time. But not almost entirely of the 2.5 years, the vans just stayed on either side of the road right in front of the school. And we got around by public transit and mostly kind of just lived within our neighborhood right there by the school.
And what, I mean, how do you guys cook in the van? Are you using like hot pots? Is it microwaves? Are you going to the supermarket? Are you going to farmer's market? Is there collective shopping?
It depends on where you were at with your van life build. I mean, my van, when I first started, I would do most of my cooking with like a little camp stove and like some camping pots. But by the end of it, and like what I'm in now as an example, like it has evolved quite a bit. And it was true for a lot of the people in my community where they were like full on off-grid tiny apartments in the back of like FedEx trucks, U-Hauls. So, I mean, their showers, like a full 2-burner stove. It's basically everything you find in an apartment. I mean, I had a buddy in my truck the other night for chili bacon cheeseburgers. And he was like, dude, I'm pretty sure this is nicer than my apartment. And I was just like, well, thanks, man. So it's evolved quite a bit.
What about security? Like both, and just maybe not for yourself, but everyone, I guess everyone was a lot of ex-army vets, but how'd you guys feel about your own security? Were there incidents? And what about like real security, like police? Like did they ever kind of give you guys problems or?
So there was a bit of some chicanery towards the very tail end of my time in San Francisco. There was like a couple attempts to like break into vehicles, some smashed windows. Like the city was kind of just going crazier and crazier into madness. But the overall time that I was there, for the most part, we didn't have too many issues. We didn't have too many people that were too worried about it. And as far as the police were concerned, like my nickname in the van life community was the mayor. And I got that reputation because I was basically well connected with everybody. Like I knew all of the campus police officers who, like the city police didn't really come on campus where we were parked. So we dealt mostly with the campus police. I knew all of the school administrators. So it was really actually pretty, pretty freaking smooth, man. Like nobody ever really bothered us. It was just like a great little community. And to the kind of the question where you started this, like what were there other people doing it? When I actually did that panel with the mayor, one of the guys who ran the newspaper who kind of hosted that conversation that night, he had told me that in his 20 plus years covering homelessness in San Francisco, our community was the first community that he had ever seen anything like what it was. Like 99.95% of the van life community in San Francisco is like a broken down van under a bridge. People are like drunk, high on meth, like pushing it across the street to avoid the street sweeper. So we were like the first highly organized van life community that he had ever seen in his 20 plus years.
Yeah. Did you interact a lot with those sectors of or vectors of the homeless community?
Not at all. Right. I mean, we talked about it a lot. There was a lot of conversation within our group, and I think with just everybody in San Francisco about like what we should do, what we're supposed to do, how to fix it, but like direct interaction, pretty much non-existent.
Right. I hope you guys are enjoying this rip with Kyle Murphy, aka the Bitcoin bum, as much as I am. But before we get back into it, I want to share some new information with you about Bitcoin 2022. The Sound Money Fest will feature a headline performance by Logic, and new speakers have been announced for the main stage, including Matt Odell, Craig Raw, and American Hoddle, who I personally saw bring down the house at BitBlock Boom in August. He was mad funny, insightful, and wise as usual. The Bitcoin 2022 conference, which celebrates Bitcoin over 4 days, April 6th through 9th, 2022, with four different passes. The 4 days include Industry Day, 2 days of main events and speakers, and lastly, a festival day, which is a day of music and networking. Prices will continue to rise over the next few months, so get in early and use our affiliate code for 10% off your tickets. Remember to use the code BitcoinMatrix for 10% off at checkout. And now, let's get back into the Bitcoin Matrix with Kyle Murphy, where we turn our attention to what we were really fighting for in Afghanistan, the petrodollar and Ponzi empires. I kind of want to go back to this, and you know, I hope I'm not beating a dead horse, but...
No, you're honestly, I was just talking to the co-founder of the Austin Bitcoin Club the other day. I put out a tweet talking about I've kind of returned to some of my military roots, and like I was going to give everything to this community and I'm ready to go back to war. And it was crazy because the video I put out for the call to arms to the December 2nd event and the flyer that we did for the Bitcoin Block Party, those two videos together did like 60,000 impressions the last time I checked. And I put out just like a simple tweet that I thought would be an interesting tweet, but that I didn't really think too much of about my military past tying into what I'm doing now. And it did better than both of those tweets. It was fucking crazy how much people really kind of want to dive into and like how much they connect with that more military side of my past. So it's not unusual at all to keep going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I hear you. It's, I mean, from my perspective, not my perspective, my experience with the military is very limited. My father served in the armed forces, and he didn't really like the experience, and he begged me never to partake. You know, he asked me never to become a school teacher like him and never go into the military. Those are the two things he really begged of me. And, you know, but he loved, we watched a lot of more war movies together all the time. And, but, you know, and then maybe my best friend growing up, his father was in the military, but was very sick from some experience where the military was covering all the expenses. And he was going to die very young, and he lived a little longer than expected, but he died a very young man. And that's really, you know, I didn't grow up near a base or anything, or have a lot of friends who served in the military. Not a lot of my college friends went off. And I really, you know, I'm stuck on this notion of like, what are we fighting for? And I think it's obvious we're fighting for the petrodollar. I mean, maybe I'm putting out too much there, and I should ask more of as a question, but like, you know, what did you feel you were fighting for when you were, you know, in the mountains and deserts of Afghanistan?
Yeah, it, I mean, the petrodollar is it's the easy way to sum up the amalgamation of what we're fighting for. Long before I learned about broken finance and the petrodollar, I realized that we were there for corrupt institutions. My general take in my year in Afghanistan and after was that we were mostly in the Middle East for pharmaceuticals. I burned plenty of mountains and fields filled with marijuana. We never, ever, ever burned up the poppy. That was high value target items. So my kind of general takeaway is that, like, the heroin epidemic that we found ourselves in around the same exact time that we kind of invaded the Middle East, to me, is not coincidence, but is the reason we were there.
Yeah, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree. I was going to ask you about that. I didn't even know if that was going too far. And I think it also coincides with, you know, the opioid epidemic winding down. The pharmaceutical industry is turning their attention to other sorts of vehicles. And, you know, maybe the troops are coming home to enforce some of these rules at home.
It wouldn't blow my mind, man. I've for many, many years, long before vaccines and mandates and the drawdown of this war, I've thought to myself, like, I wonder how many people I served with would be willing to turn their guns on American citizens and fight against us. But I'm pretty optimistic that a majority of them wouldn't. I'm even more optimistic the higher you get up into the echelons of leadership in the military, that it's unlikely that they would take those orders and hand them down. Like, a prime example was when the Secretary of State was basically like, we're going to mandate vaccines across all the military branches. And the leader of the Marines was, he essentially was like, fuck you, no, we're not. Like, I'm not going to subject the world's elite fighting force to an experimental vaccine. So thanks anyways. And I think it would be even more profoundly no if it was like, hey, we need you to go take your tanks and try and crush the secession of Austin, Texas, the Bitcoin Citadel city state. I just don't see it.
I don't think it's in that necessarily that form. I think it could be more in terms of just, you know, enforcing order or different things. I'm not even sure how it plays out. I just think it's very interesting that they're coming home around this time. I think it does coincide with the opioid epidemic, but it doesn't seem like they're being redeployed.
I think it was time to come home.
Sure.
Much more than a decade ago. So a little late, but better late than never. If I were running for president of the United States of America, I would have done it myself. I think the military, in my mind, is not going anywhere. I think it can still be super useful, mostly for defense. And beyond that, it's like useful for things like, we have, I don't know, a Corps of Engineers. Why are they not like competing in the general marketplace to try and build the roads and the bridges and the broken waterways and all of the things that we're talking about? If you pulled back most of the Navy and just like threw it out on the West and the East Coast, miles out north to south along our coastlines, you could repurpose the Coast Guard to solve the border crisis at the South. There's just a lot of different ways that I would use the military that are just much, much more beneficial than trying to run some Ponzi empire around the world.
Yeah. What do you think of the best traits the military gave you, or sort of qualities that it imbued you with?
Yeah. Discipline, I would say, is probably the biggest one. Just a sense of just like it, coming back to kind of what we talked about at the very beginning. Like, I wish I was a morning person. Like, I'm not, but I just get up and get it done because I have to. And that's what I got to do. So like, discipline, I would say, is probably the biggest takeaway I got from the military, just a sense of something bigger than the complaints I have. Community, brotherhood. Yeah, that's about it, really.
Yeah. Do you think like the military should be paid more? Like all the soldiers? And I wonder, you know, in some regards, I mean, obviously they should be paid more. They should be compensated more. I wonder though, how much does that distort the incentives? And
I think if we're talking about what they should be doing, maybe they should be getting paid a bit more, but they also shouldn't be getting paid to be at war constantly. So the idea of what they should be getting paid should be more in line with what their actual job in the military is. And it should reflect that. But ultimately, that's a very hard question to answer because I don't think the military is being utilized correctly in the first place.
How is the job assigned? Or in your case, how did you become the medic role?
It starts with tests before you join. They kind of score where you are mentally to see what you're capable of doing. And then based on like the range of IQ that you qualify for, you basically just pick the jobs that are available to you. Everybody's a soldier first, and then you go on to, so like basic training is the like everybody's a soldier first, and then you move on to your more specialized kind of job oriented training session. And then everybody reconvenes in the soldier slash job kind of amalgamation.
Right. Now, did you enjoy the medic role and learning about those procedures and those responsibilities and taking on those responsibilities? Was that something that you kind of were like more excited about some of the other roles?
I mean, I can't really speak to the other roles. I was a medic. It was what I did. I enjoyed the role to the sense that it was just what I was doing. I mean, I obviously, overall, I was ready to get out at the end of 4 years, but it was a cool experience to be Doc. I mean, that's kind of the nickname you earn when you become the medic that they trust on a line unit. and yeah, it's like, it's a really unique responsibility role because there's only one of you, and you are essentially, when it comes to the medical knowledge, like it just really doesn't matter how high ranking anybody was. When we were out on a mission, I was the only medic. Like I kind of had last say with everything that had to do with medicine. It was like, if somebody at the highest ranking position was doing something that was medically a problem, I had to be the one to call it out and be like, look, it's not, that's no, can't do it that way. It has to go this way. It's like, it's an interesting role that way. So it was a lot of responsibility thrown on my shoulders at a very young age. And I'm thankful for that because it has benefited me in the life that I live today.
Yeah. Did you learn a lot about like decision-making, especially in the moment and being present?
Absolutely. One of the things that is, it's really interesting, when I was still training back in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, before going on deployment, I once had a boss who was, these guys would basically be like, so as an example, there were days where just like my job would be, I would show up at work and I would have 5 or 6 men just screaming at me, telling me to go outside. And like, I'd have to start running laps around the building where the aid station and everything else existed, basically my work office. And at like the corner of every single corner of the building, there'd be another guy yelling at me, telling me to do burpees at this corner and squats at this corner and another thing at this corner. And I'd do that for an hour and a half. And then all of a sudden they tell me to go back into the aid station, and I'd go in and they'd have a mock like patient lying on the floor, and they'd tell you what was wrong with the patient and you'd have to do it. And as you're working on the patient, they'd grab your bag full of medicine, throw it across the room because you weren't paying attention to it. And like, they're screaming in your face. And it was once said, it was like, I know this all seems really extreme, but the reason we're doing this is because we're going to make your life so stressful every day that by the time we get to Afghanistan and bullets are whizzing by and bombs are going off, the stress will be second nature. You will just be in the zone. Everything you have to do will be muscle memory and none of it will bother you. And they weren't wrong. I mean, you want to talk about being present? There were literally times where bullets were pinging off the truck behind me and it was just like hyper-focused, like muscle memory, just do what you know you have to do.
Right. That's very interesting and fascinating. I wonder, like, you know, when like an athlete makes a comparison, going a big game is like something like warlike. Does that kind of offend you, or is that an insult, or you don't even care?
I don't give a flying shit, but no, it's not warlike.
But like,
there's nothing like war, unfortunately, and maybe fortunately. I think the best quote I've ever heard came from an episode of MASH, where one of the guys said, well, there, it's commonly said war is hell. And to that, he replied, no, war is worse than hell. Everybody who ends up in hell deserves to be there. The people in war, the casualties of war, are often undeserving. Women, children, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers. there is nothing worse than war. And I have to agree. I think that's it's a good summation of what war is. I wish it on no man and no woman.
Yeah, I kind of take it as like they're just trying to like say it's a big deal for us. You know, I don't take it as them literally equating it to war.
I think they're
trying to get their own mindset to be as close to possible, you know, in sort of that way.
I get what they're trying to say, and I'm not.
Do you think it's like offensive though? Like, is it like something ridiculous to say and shouldn't be said? Like, because you should know better. You know,
personally, I don't care. I don't know how other people feel. I'm unoffendable. Like, I don't. Like, I'm not going to be offended by the things that people say or the things that people think. Like, I got other shit to do. I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious. What do you think of the last 18 months for yourself? You know, with the underlay of you learned, I think you kind of got reacquainted with Bitcoin around 18 months ago. And, you know, it's been, and that was around the time COVID really broke. And I think that's, you know, the market's really dropped. You're looking at this thing, you know, from that point on, what is your reflection on the world? How much has changed for yourself? How Bitcoin might have played into that?
Yeah, I mean, right around 18 months ago was when the kind of thing happened, and it was like lockdowns in San Francisco. I left, me and my community of van lifers kind of jettisoned out into the US on a road trip. I started looking more at the markets and Bitcoin because kind of everybody was playing with the markets. All of my friends were like day trading and doing all kind of crazy stuff. And that was when I kind of started really looking at it. Like, I had it in my life and just like this random occurrence here and there around the world for several years. But March 2020 is when I really started to kind of look into it. July 2020 is when I bought my first Bitcoin. And 6 months after that, I was 100% in. 6 months after that, or less than 6 months after that, I was in Austin. And I was basically of the mindset where it was like, once I was 100% in, it was like, what's next? It's either leverage and like risk the Bitcoin I already have, or try and find a way to contribute some kind of value to the overall ecosystem. And that's where we've been ever since. Where I'm at with the overall state of the world, I'm really optimistic Bitcoiners are going to win. I'm really optimistic that we're going to trend in beautiful, positive directions, because that's what I want. And ultimately, one of the things I have found to be true in my life over the years is that with enough time and passion and dedication invested into something, basically anything is achievable. It becomes exponentially easier when you can rally other people into a community that have like-minded ideals and ideas. And I mean, that's just where I'm at right now. Like, I think things at nation state levels and with the fiat money system, I think a lot of things are going to get a lot worse before they start getting better. I think that that's necessary. I think the things that get worse are the things that kind of push us towards a faster curve for better. At the end of the day, I'm really, really, really bullish on humanity at large. I think a handful of really passionate, dedicated people are going to build something much better than what we've lived in for the last 50 to 100 years.
So, I mean, do you think things are going in the right direction right now and things will get better, or do you think things are going in the or not going in the right direction?
I mean, like, in what sense do you mean? Like, what things do you mean? Are they going in the wrong directions, the right direction? Like, politically, like, exactly what? Like,
and communities, more detail. Communities, like, do you think communities are healthy right now? Outside of Austin, maybe, and maybe I'm not trying to exclude Austin, but are communities healthy? Is humanity going in the right direction at this moment in time? Because you said like things are gonna get better, and things will get better over the next 50 to 100 years. So meaning like we're on that path right now, or something is going to change, or is it kind of semantics? Maybe that's it's irrelevant.
It's like starting to get almost into like a metaphysical thought process for me, which it becomes difficult to like express what I think and what I feel with English words. They just start to kind of fail me here. But ultimately, I would take a quote from a book written by Ram Dass called Be Here Now. And I would say the way is the way is the way. I don't think there is any other way but the way. We are here right now. And that is the only truth that I know. I know that I am here now. There's no other place I've ever been. And I don't believe there's any other place I ever will be. I will never be in the future. I get to some distant point in the future. And when I get there, I am here now in this moment. So I believe ultimately in the physical realm, in the idea of thoughts, the idea of human being, the idea of a separate nature from the grander vision of nature. I think we are trending down the wrong path, if you will. I don't like the things that are happening at large nation state government levels. I don't like the kind of corrosion of our freedoms and liberties. I don't like that things like Facebook and Meta are kind of destroying communities. But I ultimately believe that it is through all of that that we will find ourselves where we want to be, and that it is necessary to get there. Like through the fire, you like find something better, right? Like through the darkness, I've taken this quote in my own life where it's like, it's through the darkness of my past that I found an appreciation for the light. And I think while there are terrible things at play on a regular basis, I believe it is a beautiful time to be alive every moment that you have the opportunity to be alive. How you find the balance of those two things is what I think we're all doing here. It's like, it's okay to understand that it's the best time it's ever been to be alive because it's the only time you'll ever have to be alive, and to also understand that there are forces at work that are not working in our best interests, and we have to do everything we can with this moment in time to build the best present that we can, which leads us to whatever future we want. Like, because again, we're never going to be in the future. So what do you want in the future? Take this moment right now and do your best to get as close to aligned with that future that you want, because that's the only way. This is the way.
I hear you. What is then like a future Austin Citadel state like to you?
And I'm trying now to we're talking.
Make you talk about the future, but what does that mean to you?
Now we're talking.
What does that mean?
It means a lot of things, but I think the easiest way to say it is it means that we have created an entirely separate parallel economy in every respect. Everything that you have on a dollar system today, you have on a Bitcoin standard. It means that governance, transportation, like infrastructure, food, water.
Does it mean a separation from Texas and America? Does it a political fracturing? Does that also come with this?
I think in my mind, that is an inherent direction we are moving. And it's to me, it's less of a secession and more of just a natural progression. I think what is happening is that more and more people will just come to terms with the fact that this giant bloated thing that's not connected to what any of us are doing in real time in our local communities doesn't benefit us anymore. I think the nation state level governments will still exist. I think the main purpose they will serve will be defense. Beyond that, I would say that again, under a Bitcoin standard, when most of our tax money is taxes that we will choose to pay, we will vote with our feet and we will vote with our free money, I think that hyper-localizes. So you end up with cities that become city states. They incorporate the city, the suburbs, and the surrounding rural area. You build the infrastructure, you have Bitcoin on the balance sheet, you have all businesses and all modes of the economy intertwined into a Bitcoin standard, and you start getting sister citadel city states where you create trade routes for things that don't necessarily exist in your cities. So Austin will create trade routes with the city state of Houston for port access and things that we don't necessarily have in the center of the state as a landlocked city. And yes, I believe ultimately what governance becomes under that model is organizing. It becomes who is good at scale, proving that they can actually get large tasks done between different agencies. I don't think we're going to shortly find ourselves in a truly peer-to-peer, completely decentralized model. I think we will still have governance, but I think it will probably not be much larger than at the scale of like a city state, because anything beyond that, just it doesn't really benefit us here in our economy.
Right. What I'm tying together is, you know, that's one way it could go. I kind of hope it goes that way in the sense that the federal government just, you know, kind of focuses on property rights and national defense. But I can't help to think it might not go that way and that it might be more the United States of America fractures more permanently. And you still end up with the city states and the citadels. And I just can't help to think, you know, could you imagine if you lost your life in Afghanistan, you know, protecting America, and we end up in this better place where we have more localized governance and citadel states, and it's at the expense of America, maybe not the American project and the idea, but, sure. You know, and I can't help to think about the people out there right now defending America. And I wonder too, like if everyone switched to Bitcoin, literally just everyone switched to Bitcoin and bought Bitcoin, including the servicemen. It's like you, I don't want to be paid in fiat. It would end in a lot of ways. Things would change. And I think that's sort of the future we all want, just in the sense that, like, you know, if you're going to be a mercenary, you should be fighting for real money, for sound money. Sure. You know, if you're going to go fight, if your job is a warrior and you're like, hey, you know, you can hire me to be a warrior. I'm really good at it. I'm not so concerned whose side I'm on. I just really want to be compensated well, take care of my family, maybe for generations. But, you know, in this regard, if the money's not worth anything, or at some point it's worth less and less.
Right.
And the people fighting for it right now are getting paid in it.
Right.
You know, I think that's just like, I can't get my head around that they're risking their lives.
I think eventually they won't. And I think that's an advantage for us as people working to build a Bitcoin standard, is that at some point far enough down the line, the money that they use to pay the only way they have to enforce their standard, people will no longer be interested in fighting to enforce that standard, because the standard is so broken that I'm no longer interested in fighting for it. So from my own personal experiences in the military under the Obama administration, when I was in Afghanistan and the government was talking about being shut down, it was like, you might not get paid. I remember all the way up, all of my leadership talking about, I'm not going out on that mountain on this mission in 2 days if I'm not getting paid. Like, I'm here for two reasons. I'm here for the people next to me and the paycheck. And if I'm not getting paid, none of us are going out there. So that's all there is to it. And I think at some point, even if I'm getting paid, but I'm getting paid in a currency that's essentially worthless, it's happened throughout all of history. The Roman soldiers stopped fighting for the dinar. They said, yeah, you either pay us in pure gold or we don't fight. And we're trending in those same directions. So I'm not super worried that, like, the thing that you're talking about, though, it's this idea is very ingrained in a lot of us, right? That what would it look like if it weren't the United States of America? And I like, I'm patriotic to the ideals that formed the American dream. I'm not patriotic to the physical geography or the people that are in charge of it. I'm only aligned with the ideals that brilliant, passionate men put on paper to say, these are the things that you should fight for. And I think today with Bitcoin, that is what we're fighting for, but that in the modern era, the way that we're fighting for it is going to change the way that the geography looks. I think it makes more sense under a Bitcoin standard to be hyper decentralized and to be hyper localized. It just doesn't make any sense anymore to have this single point of failure so far away from everything everywhere else. What is the point of it? It doesn't really serve a purpose. And if it doesn't serve a purpose, we should stop feeding it. Like, it's literally draining us of our actual economic activity. It's draining us of our spirit. It's draining of us of our time and our resources. We should let the idea of America, if you will, go so that we can fight for the ideas that formed what America once was and build something even better.
It's interesting. Yeah. I think of Bitcoin as the Constitution 2.0, and it's just the global version. I think it just embeds in immutable code all the things we're looking for in terms of fairness and, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I agree. I've been talking about this for a while now, and I've been crafting that thought process in my head for a while now. And it's kind of one of those things where I've started to look at Bitcoin less as a money first thing and more as a principles first thing. It's like, what Bitcoin is to me is a set of principles, a set of ideals that is borderless. It's a set of ideals that, like, no religion, no culture, no like geographic location, none of it like makes you somehow opposed to the ideals of what Bitcoin is. And then that ideal set of principles that we can all agree upon also acts as a network that allows this global decentralized civilization to cooperate together to learn and grow those ideals. And then just magically, it also happens to act as a really good form of money.
why do you have, I agree with everything you said there. Why do you have Viva La Revolution in your Twitter profile?
Long live the revolution. Cause I think that's where we're at, man. I think whether it is peaceful or whether it is not peaceful is, I think, yet to be determined, but I do believe that we are transitioning through a period of revolution. We are fighting together to make something better than where we find ourselves today. I think, there's kind of this conversation about it's not revolution, it's evolution, right? It just takes time. Lower your time preference. And I think this is another one of those ones where it's like yin and yang. I think there's two sides to every coin. I think in the long arc of evolution, the evolution of what we do and how we operate, that long arc is created through many short arcs, and inside of those short arcs are what I would essentially call revolutions. It is short-term time frame, kind of big moments in the short term that over time in this revolution and this revolution and this revolution create the long-term evolution of what we are and how we operate. And I think where we find ourselves today is on the precipice of a revolution of thought process, of the way that we organize, of the way that we live and cooperate. And maybe there have been many before. Most of the time, human beings are not very good at understanding the exponential curve because we live a very linear life. But I think as far as the revolutions and the evolution are concerned in one conversation, my guess is that we have had many revolutions and that we are at one of, if not the last revolution that kind of leapfrogs us into the suddenly phase of what we will call a new evolution.
And you think we'll pass through this with no arms, no weapons, it'll just be an information war?
No. I wish we would pass through it with no arms and no violence. I think we will pass through it with some arms and some violence. I'm optimistic that we will pass through it with less arms and violence than many of the revolutions of the past. But I think some physical war is probably still inevitable. I think there will be some reimagining of borders and geographical shifts as far as geopolitical power struggles go. I think we have yet to see the end of it. I do not foreshadow like a World War III. I do not foreshadow any kind of like giant nation state versus citadel city state kind of like civil wars. But I see a lot more of the kind of pushback that we're seeing around the world now with protests turning into closer to riots and a lot of civil disobedience in the streets. I think we're not done with it yet. I'm optimistic that Bitcoin presents a path forward that is the most peaceful that we have ever seen. And that's why I believe that it is probably the last revolutionary cycle before we find ourselves in kind of an evolved state where the revolutions kind of start all the way over again and are much less frequent and much less large because they will not be necessary anymore. We will be transitioning into some new thing that will last for thousands and thousands of years of a new paradigm.
Yeah, man, I hear you on that. I feel like you have a cheat code, though. You've lived in a hole for 10 days with one other person. I don't know what I'd love to hear. I mean, like, do you just bring all your food with you? Are you even cooking in that situation? You're just eating, you know, dry food. And I'm going to buttress that up with, I mean, what advice would you give to somebody who doesn't have these skills, who can't just run into the woods and dig a hole and live for 10 days? should people be prepping? Do you think, you know, should people have a van in a garage somewhere parked that they can go live in for months? Is it going to just be normal and they should just, you know, clean up their social media habits? Like, what advice would you give to people?
I would come back to what we talked about when I was talking about here is the moment that you have, right? I think there's a lot of things to think about. I think there's a lot of things that you should ponder about what it is you want. I think you should find the things that you're good at, the things that you enjoy, and then you should just take every day to not worry about the future that will never come, but to actively participate in today, to get as closely aligned today with the future that you want to see. And that's all we can do. If what you want is a future where you have to run into the woods and dig a hole and survive for 10 days, then prep for that and be prepared for that and be good at that. If that's not the future you want, then I would say prep for and prepare and be ready for the future that you want and actively wake up every day to try and make today as close to that as you possibly can. And if we all start doing that, I think we'll end up in a better future together.
Yeah, man. Well, how can people get involved today in Austin or anywhere? What you know, with Bitcoin or anything hyper local? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what's coming up in Austin, how people can get involved, things like that.
Sure. Before we get into Austin, let's start with to be hyper localized. I think the first step is building communities. I think if you are out there and you've thought to yourself, like, I would love to get together with Bitcoiners more regularly, I think they're probably here. Build it, man. Just build it. Like, if you think that building a Bitcoin community would be worthwhile in your community, then you should just simply start putting some time towards that. Again, that same theme of like, if the future you want is being around Bitcoin communities more often, then go out and build Bitcoin communities, because I guarantee you that there are other people in your community that are also looking for that community. And if you build it, they will come. Hyper-localizing things onto an actual Bitcoin standard, we're going to keep pumping out information from inside of Pleb Lab and what we've got going on here. Take a look at Oshi. It's an app. It's on Android and iOS, OSHI, like Satoshi. It is a super awesome platform for onboarding businesses very easily onto a Lightning standard. We've been doing spaces with the co-founder. We've got a lot of information coming down the pipeline, but it's a great place to just get on the app, start kind of getting familiar with it. And yeah, I mean, if you are out there and you know businesses that you frequent, you're at your same coffee shop four times a week, you go to the same restaurants a couple times a week, just start talking to them. Just start telling them like, hey, look, I might be able to do this, I might be able to do that. We'd love to get you on a Bitcoin standard, and just keep bringing it up. Just keep trying to get to the owner, keep trying to help them understand why it's beneficial to them. Beyond that, if you want to help in Austin, move here. We need as many Bitcoiners here as we can possibly get. I do think this is going to be the first Bitcoin Citadel city state. If you want to participate in something like that, pack your bags and join us, man. There's a whole bunch of us here. We're ready for you. We'll definitely love to get together at the Austin Bitcoin Club. We're going to get Parker Lewis elected mayor, get Bitcoin on the balance sheet. We're going to get every business onboarded to the OSHI app. We're in the process right now of onboarding farmers, ranchers. It's all coming, man. We're literally just going to be the first place to be ready to say, we don't need the dollars. We don't need your taxation support. We're just going to do our own thing. So if you're interested in participating in that, pack your bags and join us here. Let's do it. If you're not quite there, but just want to come visit and see what I'm talking about, December 2nd is definitely the time to do it, man. We're throwing the Bitcoin block party. I'm hoping to have at a minimum 50% of the businesses on an entire street completely onboarded to a Bitcoin standard. We're going to have a couple of Bitcoin companies sponsor the event. We're going to be talking about 40, 50, 60, maybe even 70% sats back at a couple of different locations. You buy a $10 meal, you get $7 back in Bitcoin. It's going to be epic. We're just going to have a great night kicking it with Bitcoiners, doing what we do best, man.
Yeah, everyone says Parker Lewis is going to be the mayor of Austin. I think it's going to be you.
And yeah.
You're running.
I don't know, man.
You might go against him or precede him. I'm kind of curious, you know, I'm assuming you're a Bitcoin maxi. So do you think like you're just like a maxi at everything in life? Do you think Bitcoin maxis are primed or are maxis in other areas of their life, including yours? I'm asking you, but maybe if you want to reflect on all of us.
Maxis everywhere else.
That's, you know, it's like van life. I'm living in the van, you know. You know, whatever it is, it's 100%.
For me, that rings very true. I have most of my life been an all or nothing kind of guy. I have never been the person who just like walks up to the edge of the pool and dips my toes in the water to see if it's like the temperature I want it to be. I'm just like, that pool looks nice. I dive in head first. If it's cold, I get right out. If it's great and enjoyable, I swim around for a while. And when it's time to do the next thing, I'm like, that seems like it interests me. It's time to do it. Let's do it. And I'm all in until it's not the thing. And yeah, I guess to answer your question, I would consider myself a maxi in the sense that like, I jump 100% into something I think I'm interested in. So I've kind of had this philosophy where it's like, if I want to do something, I think I should do something, and I know that I can do that something, I'm just going to do it. I want to do it. I should do it. And I know for a fact that I can do it. I'm just going to do it. And I guess that's kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing in Bitcoin right now, is that it's just like, I want to do it. I should do it. And I know that I can do it. So I just wake up every day and I give everything I have. I have no idea what I'm doing, to be completely honest. I'm fucking shooting from the hip every single day, but it's been a wild journey. I love it. I'm mentally and physically exhausted at the end of every single day, but I have never in my entire life had the wellspring of spirit that I have. I am mentally and physically exhausted, but my spirit is just full, man. I wake up every day at 6 o'clock in the morning and I just like, I swear, I just jump out of bed like a Mario character. Like there's like the little boink sound and everything. I'm just like, let's go. I'm ready for another one. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. One thing I think about kind of discussing with you, you know, it's like the military has a code and you live by the code. and Bitcoin is a code. And, you know, in one respect, you could be like, I'm looking for a code and I found the code I like. And then there's like, did the code give you anything new? And so the question is really like, at its root, has Bitcoin changed you in any way? And I'm not getting at price and I'm not getting at economics, but like, is there anything in the code that has kind of like offered you something new to your code?
That is also a really great question, man. Yes, Bitcoin has changed me. What has Bitcoin added to my code is a completely unique question. I'm not sure I've heard phrased that way before. So when this question has been phrased in a slightly different variation in the past, I've kind of said that the thing that I would say Bitcoin has changed is that many of that like maximalist tendency I already had has kind of deepened in a way that nothing else has done. Like, I've been an all-in kind of guy my whole life, but nothing I've ever gone all into has ever lasted. It's like I jumped in and it was ice water and I was out one day later, track practice, one track meet. And I was like, nope, that's not for me. Never went back. Travel, like I did a year abroad. I did a couple years of van life, but like on and off. I'm at 18 months now of like all in Bitcoin. I'm not even close to bored. I'm not even close to thinking about being at the end. I wake up exponentially more excited about the prospects of what I'm doing in Bitcoin literally every single day. So I would say that the thing that Bitcoin has done more than anything is it has given me a sense of purpose that I've never found anywhere else. So there's the answer. It's like, what has Bitcoin added to my like core protocol? It is added purpose. It has given me an actual reason to get out of bed every morning.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've been waiting for this opportunity my whole life. And I don't mean in terms of love. My wife is that opportunity, but like, I mean, in terms of like an asymmetric bet, something I believe in, something I understand and gravitate towards. And I like the way it affects me. It feels like almost like a personal business. Mm. It feels like investing in myself because no one can debase it. No one can take it from me. So in that way, it's felt very entrepreneurial for myself. And I just kind of wonder, like, you know, I lost my train of thought a little bit there.
It's a beautiful thing though, isn't it?
And so, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
you're good.
So yeah, I'm just like, in that regard, okay. So like when you were in the army, like, I wonder how hard it was for you to relate to people not in the army, like from like your parents or family members or friends, like you have an issue or a problem, you know, and in Bitcoin, a lot of times people, you know, run into that issue, like they're trying to share knowledge. And so like, how do you relate now to maybe the van life crew where they are with Bitcoin, or, you know, people that you're very close with that might not have gone down the rabbit hole with you and don't see what you see the way, like, I never saw what you saw in Afghanistan. You know, right. We could have this conversation and I could try to relate and you could paint a picture for me. But if you didn't paint the picture for me, I would be that much further from relating. Right. And I might not be open to even hearing your picture.
Yeah, I mean, that's some deep stuff. I think the answer is that Bitcoin has certainly changed a lot of relationships, just like the military changed a lot of relationships. The way that I viewed the world post-military made it very difficult to relate to people that had never been in the military, especially for those first 10 years where I was still very lost in the past of what my experiences had been. Trying to find somebody who could understand the way that I was struggling was impossible. And it's why I spent so much time avoiding dealing with that struggle. Much of that still rings true in Bitcoin. It's like a thing that only a handful of people really understand. And even some of my closest friends and family, my band life crew, like none of them really fully understand Bitcoin. None of them are fully involved in Bitcoin. A few of them have bought it and still haven't really dove down the rabbit hole. They trade it, they sell it here, they buy it again here. It's not something anybody there really gets. I think the difference with Bitcoin is that I understand that not everybody needs to get it. It's one of those things where it's so ingrained in me that this is necessary, and it's so aligned with the things that I have known subconsciously and semi-consciously and now consciously for so long that it's like Svetsky talks about it a lot, where it's like you don't need mass adoption, you just need the remnant. You need that group of people who gets it and fights for it, and eventually everybody will just find themselves here because it's the right way. And I do believe that. And whether any of my friends that don't currently get it ever get it or not, it doesn't really matter. The one thing in respect to conversations about education, right, that I have found in all aspects of life, including Bitcoin, that has been beneficial for me, is that eventually I've found that, like, when words just no longer work, you've said the same thing 1,000 times, 10,000 different ways, you just get to a point where it's like, it's time to just stop talking. You've said it, they don't get it. Now take a step back and just go live it. Like, take the principles that you're trying to express through words and just go live it even more deeply, because it will be that energetic expression of the life that you live that will eventually break through. If words aren't working, show them through action. Stop talking and just do it. And I think that's true for Bitcoin, maybe more than anything else. It's just like, if you believe in those ideals and those principles of Bitcoin, then wake up today and use today to be the best version of you and build the best thing you can today that aligns with where we all want this to go.
Yeah, man. I agree. My final question for you then is, what are you doing tomorrow? Do you walk around every day with a Bitcoin flag in Austin?
Do I walk around every day with a Bitcoin flag? It's my cape, man. What is tomorrow? What day is today, man?
It's Sunday. So tomorrow's Monday.
Yeah.
What do you got on the docket?
Back in the office, man. There should be a busier office this week than last week. We had a lot of people out for TAB conference. Ben Carman's been gone for like 2 weeks. He was bachelor partying and weddings in Vegas. Like, I'm glad that we'll have somebody back in the office fucking Bears tomorrow. That'll be good. But yeah, no, it's just back to the office. I've got a couple of conversations on the docket this week for some things I'm not really able to talk about at the moment, but we've got a lot of work to do between here and December 2nd. So some of the things going on here at Capital Factory and with this office space are conversation points we'll be having probably this week. Some potential opportunities to expand this office space are conversations on the docket for this week. I've got a handful of conversations with some Bitcoin companies about sponsorship for the Bitcoin Block Party. Yeah, just back at the grind, man.
Sounds good, man. Definitely. I've enjoyed this so much, Kyle. This has been so dope. Let everyone know where they could find you and all the projects, whether it's on Twitter or the websites, and how you can get involved, come to the meetings, and go to the barbecue. The block party.
Yeah. I feel like I need to probably write down a list for a future podcast where it's like, where do they go? There's so much of them at this point. I've lost track myself. Probably the best couple, go to Twitter at Austin Bitcoin Club. That's where we'll talk about our free and open source kind of community-oriented events. You can follow me at my personal Twitter, the_Bitcoin_bum.
You might have to change that. You're not a bum, man.
I get what you're saying. The moniker, I tweeted it. It's the one pinned tweet I've got. It's like, I used to actually be a bum, and Now I'm kind of the Bitcoin bum in the sense that I spend an inordinate amount of time working on Bitcoin.
I'm glad you explained that. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Because I saw it as a little negative tweet and a little high time preference because you're no longer a bum or I never were. But, you know, to call yourself that and to continuously call yourself that, I'm like, come on. Maybe it's not true.
Maybe it's time for a rebranding. Yeah, I'll give myself some titties while I'm at it, gain a few extra followers.
Oh, man, the pictures, the working out, just sharing a lot. How'd the BitFit 30 go?
Man, I haven't been keeping up with it at all, to be honest. I feel bad because I know a lot of people were super pumped about it. Ryan Calder is doing great things. I keep following what he's working on. He's definitely an inspiration to some of the fitness community right now. The last week I've been actively starting to get better at it again myself. I've been getting back to yoga in the mornings. I've been getting to some gym sessions. I kind of used the office and some of the madness that was going on here as an excuse for why I fell off the wagon, but time to start getting disciplined again. So if I'm being honest, it's BitFit 30 was kind of a failure to get me remotivated, but slowly but surely finding my way back into a more disciplined routine again. So,
well, I appreciate the honesty, and it was motivating seeing your tweets, whether you carried through with it or not. You know, you do share a lot. You're half naked in some of them.
Well, I don't think anybody wants full naked yet, so we'll keep that to myself.
Fair enough, bro. This has been so dope.
Yeah, good chat, man.
This episode with Kyle Murphy, the Bitcoin bum, on his time in the army, living in a van, Ponzi empires, and what your true value really is, was brought to you by Ledin, Bitcoin Magazine, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. If you want to see what it's all about and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Last year, over 10,000 Bitcoiners came to celebrate Bitcoin at Bitcoin 2021. But for Bitcoin 2022, they are expecting tens of thousands of Bitcoiners. It's going to be off the hook, and I hope to see you there and chill out with a cold beer. For 10% off, make sure to use the code BitcoinMatrix at checkout. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, please make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Stack sats, stay humble, and stay laser focused. This is Cedric. Peace.